Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Acid Cat Spirit Hour. We just want to do a little housekeeping before the episode and say thank you for watching. Please like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. If you're watching on or listening on anything else, give us a follow. And check us out on Instagram and Twitter. We're active on there with updates of everything we're doing. So enjoy this week's episode. Everybody, welcome back to the Acid Cat Spirit Hour for this week, the second week of February in 2021. We hope you're having a good one. Hope you have a Valentine lined up. Just kidding. That's a made-up, stupid holiday, and you shouldn't care about it at all.
Do something for yourself.
Yeah, today we wanted to talk about something a little... we've been talking about a lot of heavy stuff. We've been talking about aliens. We've been talking about political espionage, and we wanted to get a little lighter with things, I guess, a little bit, and something that has roots for you.
Yeah.
Today we wanted to discuss Shergar. Shergar was a racing horse that was kidnapped in the 80s, but we wanted to talk about it a little bit because Caleb and his family have a connection to horse racing. Would you like to share that with everybody?
Yeah, so my fifth great uncle... great-great-great-great-great-uncle was a racehorse raiser.
Would you like to tell everybody what his name was?
His name was William B. Barefoot.
Billy B. Barefoot.
Billy B. Barefoot. And he had a racehorse named Single G.
He had a stable boy named Leroy Jenkins.
Yeah, before every race, he would, "Let's do this!" and then run in. He is the... horse that time forgot.
Okay.
He is one of the oldest racehorses.
What is this horse's name?
Single G.
Single G, okay.
And he's named that because he was dark brown, but he had a white, almost perfectly shaped G on his forehead.
Okay.
He raced for 17 years of his life, which is way longer than most racehorses.
Yeah, that's really long for a horse.
And he won so many races. He... was entered into a little over 400 races and won a little less than 300 of those.
Dang.
And in his career made $121,000, which we're talking 1900s money.
Yeah, that's
which
good
is
money.
Quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
And he...
Well, just to quickly interject, mm-hmm. anybody who... at home who might know this, but Arnold Rothstein, the sort of fundamental grandfather of organized crime, he was a prolific sports cheat. He's the one who fixed the 1919 White Sox World Series.
Yes.
He also was notorious for fixing horse races around this time because the pots were so large.
Single G, like I said, was retired at 17. Then, as we'll talk about with the story that we're going to get into, once a racehorse retires, they get moved to become a stud,
yep.
which is just breeding more racehorses.
Pony factory.
And he sired 81 horses who all had, which I thought was really funny doing research into this, standard records. Meaning,
I got one
they
of those.
Weren't that great. He was, as I said, the horse that time forgot, because he raced so good for so long that a lot of popular famous horses... are really popular for a short amount of time. That's why they're super famous. But he was just so good for so long that people just kind of forgot that he was good.
Yeah, dude. We all know Single G.
Single G won again.
When I was a kid, I used to go to... my hometown has I think it's a quarter mile. It might even be smaller than that. But it's a little dirt oval track. As a horse race track, too. But as a stock car track. And the winningest stock car driver used to live caddy corner from my childhood home. These people ruled, because not only was that guy the winningest driver at the track that we'd go to every week, it was also the house that gave out full candy bars on Halloween.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it was quality, but that, it's kind of the same situation. He sort of just, like, was such a winning racer up there that mm-hmm. everybody was kind of like, could you just stop? Like, you're not...
stop racing?
Yeah, you don't have competition. They just take it for granted rather than being celebrated. It's just like, you're just too good. Just it's like Tom Brady, you know? Like, just retire.
I did want to point out a really cool thing about Single G before we move on to Shergar. His fastest race was 1:58.5, at age 15.
Whoa.
Which is really old for a racehorse.
Yeah, and to be running at its fastest.
And no horse has ever duplicated it at that age.
That's wild.
There has never been a horse that fast at that age. He was also the first horse to ever beat 2 minutes twice in one day.
Wow.
And he has the leading money winning for a standard bred horse over 20 years.
Oh, he was a standard bred horse.
He was a standard bred horse. After his retirement in 1926, he held that record for over 20 years of having the most money earned.
Well, and didn't you tell me that, like, he came, because with a standard bred horse, typically, you know, that it's not a thoroughbred horse.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily intended for racing.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me that your great 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 granduncle, that he say that right? Is that the term? I think I got
granduncle.
Yeah,
I think so. Great uncle.
Great uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was offered a blank check for the horse, right?
Yeah. The city commerce of Detroit offered him a blank check, and he's like, no. He's like, no. That's
the biggest mistake your family's ever made. I'm sorry to everybody in the family, but come on. A blank check for a horse? Let's talk about Shergar. So, Shergar, this is definitely a little peek behind the curtain for those watching and listening at home. The way that we typically do these podcasts is I have a topic I want to talk about, or Caleb has a topic that he wants to talk about, and that's what we talk about. Today is very much a Caleb topic.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, Shergar is something that I'm familiar with, but you're intimately familiar with. But I know, here's what I know. I know that he was a racehorse.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he was the winningest racehorse, right?
He was.
Explain that a little bit.
So, he was a racehorse. Everyone, especially in the United States, when everyone thinks of racehorses, they probably think of the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, American Pharoah.
The Triple Crown, all that.
Yeah.
But racehorsing exists for much longer than that and all around the world. Shergar was an Irish racing horse.
Yep.
So all of his races were in Ireland.
And he went, nay!
He was the most winningest racehorse at the time. This was in the 80s. And he won 8 races, which you think, oh, I just talked about, like, 99 races.
Yeah, 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 winning 300 races.
But that was an outlier. He was a racehorse for about, he was born in 1978, and he was retired in 1981.
Okay.
So he was 4 years old, right? Yeah. Is that math correct?
Yes.
4 or 5?
Yeah, he's almost 5, yeah.
So the 15-year, of course, there was 99 races in 15 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's an outlier.
Yeah, Shergar hadn't been racing very long.
He hadn't. He had only been racing for like 2 or 3 years, and in that time won 8 major wins, including the Guardian Classic Trial, the Chester Vase, the Epsom Derby, the Irish Derby, the King George VI, and Queen Elizabeth Stakes, which is the big one. That's the big game of racehorsing, especially in England and Ireland.
Yeah.
And so he was a very famous racehorse worth about, towards the end of his career, £15 million.
Which is interesting because while we'll get into him getting stolen, you mentioned earlier that he wasn't insured for that amount, right?
He wasn't. He was only insured for about £3 million. When we talk about how much a horse is worth, it's more than, like, he only made like $100,000 out of racing.
Well, yeah, with a horse, it's all about its studding.
It's all about studding. Yeah, that's
it's about
where
breeding.
When he was done racing, he was moved to a stud farm, which a stud farm is the coolest thing for a horse because instead of having to run for a living, you have sex for a living.
That's all they do.
He had sex with 40 different mares, or 44 different mares, and had, they gave birth to 36 racing horses.
Yeah. So, prolific horse.
Yeah.
Prolific genes, very important, considered to be a very important horse.
Very important horse. Which is why he was the target of a kidnapping.
Yeah, so this is the thing that gets me. Like, you know, last week we talked about espionage and we talked about assassination. And with that, you kind of, you know, kidnapping is typically brought along with that. And I was surprised there was so little kidnapping in our story last week. But when you think of kidnapping money targets,
mm-hmm.
you think of ransoming art, you think of ransoming people, you think of, you know, I think the average person probably thinks of, you know, human trafficking when they think of that sort of thing. Not a horse. Nobody thinks of a horse. Nobody steals
a horse.
So I have a slightly different experience growing up, but I grew up around horses. I grew up around cattle, and I couldn't imagine, like, you know, there's the jokes of rustling cattle and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the way I always looked at it is that just seems like a lot of fuss. Cattle are already a big pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Horses are very difficult animals to move around safely. Like, if you remove a horse from its place, like, take its feet off the ground, it's a really big animal with fragile bones.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't seem like the best thing to steal. Steal a diamond.
To learn a little more about the horse and about why he was kidnapped, let's talk about his owner a little bit.
Aga Khan IV.
Aga Khan IV, he is the Iman of the Shia Islam. He was majority owner.
Well, so after, yeah, because after the Epsom Derby, with racehorses, sometimes you entirely own the horse. Like, in the case of Single G, I would imagine that Harry Barefoot probably completely owned that horse. Was it Harry or was it Billy?
It was William Barefoot. Billy. Harry is his brother,
yeah.
Who is my great-great-great-great-grandpa.
Which we somehow omitted, yeah. Also, there's a lot of weird names in this family. They're great names is what they are. But they sell shares in some horses. Like, he definitely owned all of that horse. Most racehorses have shares in them.
So, yeah, there was a horse syndication.
Yeah, yeah.
He turned down the offer, but it was still owned by a bunch of different people. He just owned 6 majority shares.
Yeah.
And each share was worth like $36,000.
Yeah.
So he owned the majority, therefore it was his horse. But there were other people that also owned part of the horse. Someone owned a leg, someone owned the mane, someone owned the tail. But he was the majority owner, therefore he was the technical owner of the horse, just like any company.
Yeah.
If you're
yeah.
the majority shareholder, you own the company. Even though there's other people that have a play in it. Well, Aga Khan has a bunch of different racehorses, and he also has a bunch of different stud farms to make more racehorses.
Yeah, the Khan family are, they're prolific horse breeders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have, like, the biggest, well, that's unfair, but they have some of the largest and most successful breeding, like, stud farms in England, in the UK.
Yeah, and he has a lot of dealings with horses. He sells horses and stuff, which comes into play later.
Horse broker.
He's a horsemonger, if you will. A horse chucker.
I think a horsemonger would sell horse meat, actually.
Well, he probably sold horse meat, too. Not everyone's a winner, okay?
Jeez. Off to the glue factory with you.
Off to the races. He was, like I said, a religious figure. He was also in Shia Islam.
Mm-hmm.
A religious figure in Shia Islam, which when we get into the Islam religion, there's a lot of conflict between different types.
Yeah, yeah.
So that plays a big part, which we'll get into later. And he did a lot of dealings with horses, which will also play into it. But now that we know about him, let's talk about the actual kidnapping.
Oh, the kidnapping's awesome. So, quick note, we're shooting this on February 8th.
Mm-hmm.
I only point that out because that's the day this horse got stolen.
Yes. So, February 8th, 1983...
8:30.
At 8:30 p.m., 3 men, all armed and wearing masks, showed up to Ballymanny.
Yeah.
Is how you pronounce
Ballymanny.
It. Ballymanny. Which is the stud farm
that
Shergar was held at.
Yeah, it was his home stud farm.
And the head groom, or stable boy, but stable boy isn't the best because this is a full-grown man.
Yes.
His name
was Leroy Jenkins.
Jim Fitzgerald. He was staying there. His family lived there as well. 3 armed men wearing masks entered his house and was like, "Hey, buddy, come with us." And he was like, "Yep, you guys have guns. That's definitely a thing I'm going to do." They put him in a van, and they were a part of a group that were at least 6 to 9 people large. Well, they made Jim come with them, took him to the stables, and they said, "We have come for Shugar. We want £2 million.
Yeah, well, so... An important note to sprinkle in here is that in 1983, in Ireland, there was a large group, a paramilitary group known as the IRA,
mm-hmm.
that were fighting a civil war.
Yes.
And to have, the reason I'm saying, I mean, we're going to talk about the IRA a lot, but the reason I'm talking about it is because to the people at home that are maybe like, I think the American impulse is like, "Oh, somebody just came in my house with a gun. I'm going to attack you, or I'm going to shoot you," which obviously is a really stupid idea. Guns are dumb, and it's not going to work. I know that you're the superhero narrative in your head. You're like, "I got this guy." But there, I mean, if if those guys came into your house, I think the immediate assumption is this is the IRA. Because there's nine of them. They're in a van. They're organized. They all clearly have Irish accents. They all have guns.
Yeah.
Like, they had guns.
Yeah, they had machine guns.
Yeah, they didn't show up with a couple of handguns saying, give us your horse. They showed up with machine guns and were like, give us your horse now.
Although, one thing, only one of them spoke, which was the one that said, we're here for sugar, we want 2 million pounds. He had a Northern Irish accent.
Yeah.
Which this all took place in Southern Ireland.
Yep.
Which you may be thinking, oh, what's the difference? There's a difference.
That's where the line was. Just like our Civil War was North and South, so was theirs.
So was theirs. That deemed some speculation. And another thing of speculation is one of the members of the team that came to kidnap him seemed very well versed in caring for horses, which sparked some interest. But anyways, they took him to the stable. They locked his family in a room and was like, you guys stay here. We're taking Jim. We're going to the stables. Took him out to the stables at gunpoint and was like, hey, put Sugar in a horse box, which is the best name for a way to transport a horse.
A horse box.
Someone's like, hey, we have this box on wheels that we use to transport horses. What should we call it? Oh, let's call it a horse box. I'm calling everything just animal box, depending on what animal you put in there.
Maybe it started with the Trojans. And, you know, do you think maybe, like, we all call it the Trojan horse?
They just called it the human box.
Yeah, so maybe they called it the horse box, and everybody was like, no, that horse box thing's got to go the other way around.
So they loaded him up. They half of the group took off with Sugar. The other half put Jim in a van, drove him around for 4 hours, and then told him to lay down on the floor, and then they kind of just rolled him out of the side of the van.
He wild card
was only about 20 miles away.
I mean, it's Ireland. Like, you're only ever really 20 miles away.
What they do, drive to one side of the country and then to the
four-hour trip was just driving around the island.
I'd like to think they didn't actually go anywhere. They went 20 miles and they sat in a parking lot and they were just like for 4 hours. But they kicked him out. He was released near a village of Kilcock, 20 miles away from Ballymanny. And he was told
not... These are fun names.
It's such a fun name.
Yeah. We did all Korean last time and, like, Malaysian. And that's a great, you know, great languages, but they're not nearly as fun as Irish.
No. It's like, yeah, my buddy Fitzgerald from Kilcock over there, he's a wild man. Ain't that right, O'Callaghan? You're sure right, O'Doyle.
He works at Ballymanny.
He works at Ballymanny. But no. They told him very specific things. They're like, hey, don't call the police.
Yeah.
Which, with any kidnapping, is pretty typical.
I'm only going to interject here to quickly say that this just screams of a professional job. They know to drive him around to confuse him. They know what to do with him. They, you know, like, there are threats towards his well-being. Like, it all just feels very professional. Although that also is based on what I've seen in films, you know. So what the fuck am I talking about?
Then they told him one thing. They were like, they said King Neptune, and that's how we're going to identify ourselves. Our group is King Neptune.
That's such a good name.
They did not say that they were from the IRA or give any indication of who they were, other than, like I said, one dude had a Northern Ireland accent.
Can you imagine if they left a business card?
They're like, King Neptune?
Like, I know you have to clarify that they didn't say they were the IRA, but would they...
Hey, I know we just kidnapped you and your horse. By the way, we're the IRA. My name's Jeff.
If you need to get a hold of me, this is my card. Here's my number. My cell is on there. My fax. Go ahead and shoot me one anytime you need.
Yeah, so they were like, King Neptune's our name. Horse stealing's our game. And then they released him.
English are lame.
He then walked to the next village over and called his brother. And he was like, hey, can you pick me up? I got kidnapped. Another Tuesday, am I right? Yeah. And he went back to Ballymanny. He called another guy, Ghislaine Dirian.
Man, that name.
Yeah.
That name. It always leads to trouble and trafficking.
And he was like, hey, Sugar got kidnapped. Please don't call the police, otherwise they're going to kill me and my family, so that's not going to be cool. And he's like, yeah, no problem.
And if you thought the IRA... did it, you would actually think they were going to do it.
Yeah.
Because they would.
And then Dirian called Aga Khan, who was in Switzerland
at the time.
And he was like, Sugar got kidnapped. And he's like, okay, cool. Hung up the phone.
Is that how you think that conversation went? Hey, yeah, you know that horse? Yeah, that one. The one that's worth everything? That's won every race? It got stolen by guys with machine guns last night.
He's like, cool, I'm in Switzerland. I'm about to eat a real sick chocolate bar. I'll call you right back.
He's like, hey, I hate to bother you. Someone stole one of the little horse boxes. And I think maybe Shergar was in the... I think he was in the box.
And then once he
hung up the phone,
he picked up a different phone, not the same phone, and called Shergar's vet, who was also a major shareholder. Not the major shareholder, but a shareholder nonetheless. And he was like, the vet was like, okay, I know a guy, hung up the phone, picked up his third phone, and called retired Irish Army Captain Sean Barry, who ran the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Society.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is strange. And he was like...
This is starting to feel a little bit like Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, a little bit. And he's like, hey, Barry, Shergar got kidnapped. And he's like, cool, hung up the phone. Barry picked up a phone called Alan Dukes, a friend of his who was serving as the Ministry of Finance. Or the Minister 80s. Of Finance.
They had a lot of phones.
And he's like, hey, what should I do, man? Shergar got kidnapped, you know. And he's like, hey, I know who you should call. You should call Michael Noonan, the Minister of Justice. And he's like, okay. They picked up the phone, and he's like, hey, man.
You guys just talked to each other.
He said, hey, man, it's Barry. I got Barry on the phone. This is Dukes, by the way. And he's like, yeah, cool. And then Noonan was like, yeah, hold on one second. We should call the police. Which is it's such like a comedy movie thing.
I know. I think I might play Yakety Sax over that whole bit.
And he was like...
calling people to find out who they should call. Imagine like, calling somebody the Department of Justice and then being like, I don't know, call a local cop.
And he was like, let's see. Okay, and then they went back to the first person, Ghislaine Duryan, and he was like, okay. And he called Aga Khan again, and he's like, hey, dude, so I talked to a bunch of people, what should we do? And he's like, call the police. And he's like, man, that was way easier. I had to go through like six other people. So by this time, it was 4 a.m. Like I said, he got kidnapped at 8.
And it's not like a sneaky kid, you know? Like, there was a guy, there was King Neptune. Like, there were guns. This was a public thing.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was, I guess I'm saying this. It's not like somebody stole your car in the middle of the night, and then you woke up, and you're like, oh, shit, my car got stolen. No, no, no. No, a guy came in your house, put a machine gun in your mouth, and said, give me your car.
Give me your horse. and so he was like, all right, I guess you're right. Called the police, and they're like, hey, police, our horse got stolen. And they're like, well, when? And they're like, 8 hours ago. He said, cool, yeah, we can't do anything. Like, what do you want us... That was 8 hours ago. All leads are cold now. Like, what do you want us to do? And he's like, I guess you're right. Fuck. So, that being said...
Do you think... So, all of this ineptitude, though, like... speaks to the conspiracy part of my brain that feels like intentional playing coy. You know, like, tie him up so we can get away with this.
A little bit.
Because it does, I mean, the fact that one of the stockholders was a vet, the fact that the IRA were guns for money, and this horse being as valuable as it is, the conspiracy part of my brain immediately says it was an inside job, and they stole their own horse to defraud people.
So... to play into that, the vet, you mentioned the vet, and there's a really funny thing, an interview with the vet. He was staying at a hotel at the time, and he got a phone call, that phone call, to the front desk. And so they were like, hey, man, you got a phone call down here. They said, hey, man.
This is the most common hand gesture on this podcast.
It is. They said, hey, man, you got a phone call down here. And he's like, all right, cool, I'll come down and get it. Goes down to the front desk, and they're like, yeah, you got a phone call. By the way, who are you? And he's like, oh, I'm Shergar's vet, and he just got kidnapped. And the front desk person was like, that makes sense why the police are here.
Well, yeah, because they were, like, everywhere.
Yeah. But no, so all that going on, while Fitzgerald was not back from out of town, his brother was bringing him back, there... Ballymanny got a call, and you can actually look it up. This call was recorded, and the lady working the front desk at Ballymanny was like, hello, this is blah blah blah, Ballymanny, how can I help you? And this guy with an accent is like, yeah, this is King Neptune. And I'm giving him a weird accent. It's definitely an Irish accent. He's like, this is King Neptune, you know, the guys that stole your horse, could I possibly have $40,000, please? And she was like, no.
Wait, so they... Hold on. So they ransomed this horse for £2 million, but then asked for 40, 2,000 pounds?
So they just told Fitzgerald that we are going to get 2 million pounds for him.
Gotcha.
But the first phone call, they're like, hey, we want 40,000 pounds. And she's like,
So they started an Indiegogo for this horse's release.
And then...
Has anybody done that? Has anybody ever kidnapped somebody and then made a Kickstarter to get them free?
Probably. let's see. And then...
Let's go kidnap a YouTuber. Oh, I don't think I can say that.
So they're like, we want Jeremy Maxwell, a famous horse trainer. And he's like, okay, so what do you want me to do? And they're like we told the other person, we want $52,000. And he's like, 52,000? Didn't you say 40,000? And they're like, huh?
I like to think that on the other end of that phone call, they were like arguing about how much money to ask for because they were going to like throw a party maybe. They're like, oh shit, I totally forgot. We're going to need like 12 grand for beer.
He's like, $40,000. Did you say 12 grand for beer? $52,000.
It's like when you're ordering pizza with your friends. Like, hang on. I'm so sorry. Hold on a second. Yeah, so we're going to need breadsticks too.
And then he was, the King Neptune on the phone was like, we'll only negotiate with three people. Derek Thomas and Josh Oakley, two racehorse commenters on TV. And also,
could you imagine if, like, John Elway got kidnapped in the 1990s and they were like, we will give him back to the Broncos if we can speak to John Madden.
And also, Peter Campling from The Sun. That's the three people that would only be
the only three people they talk to.
Yes.
Do you think that's because those three people had IRA ties?
No, I think it's because that way I'd get more coverage.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah,
being like, sure, we'll only negotiate with three members of the press. Being like, these people are 100% going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So those three got corralled into the Europa Hotel in central Belfast.
Okay.
By Thursday evening, like the next day, they're like, all right, you three are here. We're watching you. You guys have to negotiate. Fun fact about the Europa Hotel, it's the most bombed hotel and has multiple bomb attacks and also the most bomb threats of a hotel in history.
That's fascinating.
So I don't know why they were like, you know what's a good place to keep these three negotiators? The most bombed hotel. That's Wes Anderson's new movie. It's the sequel to Grand Budapest Hotel. It's the most bombed hotel.
It's the not so great Belfast Hotel.
So once they got to the hotel, they got a phone call and they're like, hey, actually, you're going to come to the guy who got the phone call's house and wait for further instruction.
This is, I've had this happen selling motorcycle parts on Craigslist.
Hey, actually, I can't make it. Could you meet me at the rallies at 4th and Grinstead?
Dude, totally, 100%. Well, I don't know why every Craigslist transaction insists on being so damn awkward. It's like, hey, can you meet me in a parking lot? Really? Like, I can't meet someone I know in a parking lot and have it not be awkward. We're two people standing in the middle of an empty concrete slab. Give me my DS.
So, after this, someone found out that they were shacking up with Maxwell.
Okay.
And a bunch of people kept getting calls, like, essentially prank calls. So they got one call.
I mean, could you resist?
And the police were like, keep them on the call as long as possible.
Yeah, because
the call
only
lasted about 80 seconds, so they couldn't be traced. Then there was a bunch of series of calls. One at 1:30 kept the caller on the line for over 90 seconds, which he thought was enough and hung up, was not enough.
That's a funny reprimand. Did you get him, boss? No, I did not.
But the funny thing is, the person who was supposed to intercept and trace the calls had finished his shift at midnight and had gone home. And then at 7 a.m.
Sorry, man, I'm clocking out.
At 7 a.m., there was another call that was put through to his house that was like, yeah, man, things went awry and the horse is dead, and then just hung up. And he was like, I'm sorry?
That reminds me of when we were talking about the UFOs over Great Falls, and the guy who called and was like, hey, we got a thing, and the commanding officer was like, whatever, just watch it. And then he called back and was like, hey, somebody just got really hurt, and then hung up the phone.
But then, yeah, they were like, yeah, that call saying that things went awry was fake. They didn't use King Neptune at all. It was obviously someone pranking them. It was a hoax.
Okay.
That being said, February 9th, so the day after, they got another call for negotiations contacting the Balamani directly and speaking to Darian at 4:05 p.m. and it was really short. And they were like, hey, What up, King Neptune here. How you guys doing? Now we want
shout-outs from the deep.
Sugar's here. He's fine. Here, you want to talk to him?
See, well, they sent a picture. Fine.
They did, yeah. They held up a newspaper next to Sugar's head and was like, see, it's today. He's fine. But that's when they were like, hey, we want 2 million pounds. And they gave a contact number in France where they're like, this is where further negotiations can happen. So that was weird. The syndicate that owned Sugar all came together and they were like, hey, they brought in this consultation firm called Control Risks to handle negotiations. And they were like, so what are we going to do?
Imagine that being what you consult in. Like there's being an IT guy,
yeah.
Or, you know, like there's being a designer or something. What do you do? Oh, we negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah. And they're like, what should we do? And they're like, let's hold off. We don't know what to do right now. We don't even know if he's alive. That's when they got a picture next to the newspaper. The newspaper had February 11th. So it was, I believe, the 11th or 12th by this point.
Okay.
And they're like, yeah, we can tell that's him, but it doesn't tell us that he's alive. And it was just his head next to a newspaper. We don't know if that head's attached to a body.
And, I mean, you know, the already existing cinematic tropes at that point would indicate that maybe you'd cut the horse's head off.
Then on February 12th, they got another phone call.
They left it in the police officer's bed and were like, give us money or you'll never see the rest of this horse again.
They sent a hoof clipping, like the Big Lebowski.
It's like a cut of its mane.
Yeah, lock of its hair.
Really took me a lot to get that out. But haircut.
So, on February 12th, they got another call.
Okay.
Return of the finger.
Ring, ring.
At 10:40 p.m. And they're like, sup, King Neptune, you got our money? And they're like, we're not satisfied with the picture of the horse. We don't know if it's alive or not. That's not enough proof. And the caller was like, if you're not satisfied, that's it. And they said, I'm sorry? And the dude hung up, never heard from the negotiators again. They're like, and they kept calling him. They're like, hey, please. And they never got back to him. Took out like ads in the newspaper being like, King Neptune, we're sorry. Please take us back.
Isn't that wild to think, like, imagine taking out, it's a weird thing to like call the bluff. And then have them be like, okay, well, we're just going to kill your fucking horse then.
Yeah.
You're not going to catch it, so we're just going to kill it.
This isn't enough. All right, fine. It's not enough then. Peace, dude. And they're like, no, please don't kill our horse. I want to talk about the three possible suspects that the media brought to head.
Heard.
So.
Yeah, who done it? We keep saying the IRA because they're the most. To be clear, this is an unsolved case. So
it's still unsolved, yeah.
I guess we should. I'm probably going to have to put an allegedly on the screen every time we say the IRA did it. Like right now, there'll be a big one. But because this is alleged, but there have, we'll get into it, but we don't know exactly who did it. So who did they think did it at the time?
So there was a ton of police investigation. Like I said, it was,
well, yeah, man's the winningest horse of all time.
It was a little hindered because there was the 8-hour lapse between the crime being committed and the crime being reported.
Yeah. But they were really communicative.
They were in the stuff. The head, the chief superintendent, James Murphy, who was a highly experienced detective, in his first press conference, he was like, it was described as he was slightly concerned. And he said, I have no leads. He's like, but he like withheld a bunch of information from the media. He basically went in front of a bunch of news sources and was like, I got nothing. And in reality,
he had a bunch.
He had a magazine for a submachine gun that was linked to the IRA.
Where was that found at the scene or something?
It was found at the scene, yeah. Okay. It was like an empty magazine. He had
to be clear, he doesn't mean like a paper magazine. He means like the one bullets go
into. Yeah. Not the paper one that bullets go into. Yeah. That's a sporting goods magazine. no, but he had a real weird sense of humor. And at one press conference, he announced, he said, a clue? That's not something we got. That's how he addressed it. He was like, we ain't got one of those.
That timeless Irish charm.
And a bunch of people to bring it back to one of our first episodes, a bunch of psychics that worked with, that claimed to be psychic, that worked
Gene
with the
Dixon,
Irish police.
Was Gene Dixon there?
Maybe.
It's that time.
Said that they contacted the police and they're like, well, we think he's there. He said, diviners, clairvoyants, and psychic persons. They're in three different categories. They must be running in the 50s now. Like, he's like, so many psychics are calling us. He's like, I hate this. A bunch of people thought he was super funny and stuff. They said he was the most richly comic copper since Inspector Clouseau. But he was just a real
like
funny
the right
dude.
Guy on the job. Did you guys hear about the horse?
But then a lot of people started, as time went on, a lot of people started to get sick of it. They're like, yeah, nothing's happening, and this dude's just cracking jokes about this horse.
He's just using it to put himself over.
But with so little information, that's where a bunch of suspects came out.
Well, yeah, because the less information you got, the more, you know, anybody could be a suspect.
So the media went rampant.
Yeah, as they're off to.
So I want to talk about the three main suspects.
Hit me.
We already have one, the IRA.
Yes.
The most reasonable suspect.
Most likely, certainly.
Then we talk about the two unusual suspects.
Yes.
Gaddafi.
Like Muammar?
Yes.
Muammar Gaddafi?
Colonel Gaddafi.
Oh, is that because of Khan? Aga Khan?
For two reasons.
Aga Khan.
So this one is still the IRA being a suspect, but also Gaddafi being a suspect. Gaddafi and Khan did not have a good relationship.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine religiously they disagree with one another, mm-hmm, in terms of policy. But also, like, you know, horses are very popular in Libya. And yeah, they're definitely a symbol of status.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So one media news source was like, this is our theory of what's going on. The IRA needs money because they're a militant group. They're not a state-funded military.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And so the theory was Gaddafi went to the IRA and was like, hey, if you steal this horse from this guy I don't like, I'll buy you a bunch of guns.
Sounds like a good deal for the IRA.
Yeah. So that was a big...
also sounds like a side plot from Red Dead Redemption.
It does.
I'm pretty sure it is a mission, including Gaddafi. He's in there, too.
They even, like, were like, yeah, we've even seen pictures of Gaddafi riding Sugar.
Yeah, that was my favorite thing in Discovery to see, was that I wish there was a picture. I want so badly, if anybody wants to get us a lovely gift for our studio, get us a painting of Muammar Gaddafi riding Shergar, like those pictures of Putin
shirtless riding a horse.
I want Muammar shirtless riding Shergar.
And the theory was he then gave it to this guy. He was a missing guy named Lord Lunkin, or Lord Lucan, my bad. Okay. Who
I think Lord Lunkin is like that's a Sesame Street character.
He gave him to a Middle Eastern horse breeder for a stud.
Okay.
Being like, I'm going to steal this. You guys get money. I'll buy you guns with the money. Then I'll give the horse to my friend who's a horse breeder here in the Middle East.
Well, that's...
We'll use him for a stud. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, you know, it runs in parallel. There's the trope, I guess you could call it a stereotype maybe, but the trope that, like, lots of lost art or stolen things. I mean, it's been proven before that a lot of these things are in Saudi sheikhs' houses.
Mm-hmm.
Just like all of the sort of religious treasures of the world are probably in the basement of the Vatican.
Yeah.
Or
the Mona Lisa was in Napoleon's bathroom.
Well, yeah, but the Mona Lisa, this is probably a different story for a different time, but the Mona Lisa is a painting that we only care about because it got stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got stolen by an Italian who thought that the French shouldn't have this great Italian painting, kept it in his house for years and years and years, and then eventually it was recovered. It was, at the time, it was really easy to steal because it was one of the lesser Da Vinci paintings. And
it's
then
also
they,
tiny. Yeah, I didn't realize. It's like an 8x10.
Yeah, it's really small. Now it's more centrally focused in the Louvre. But before it was stolen, people didn't really give a shit about the Mona Lisa. It was definitely not this conspiracy hub. It wasn't this like super mysterious thing. It wasn't the greatest painting of all time, which it's not, but because nothing can be. But, you know what I mean? Like, it was, there was a very different approach. And I could easily see this thing. Fuck, there's still paintings that were stolen in Boston that are 100% just in some shitty Southie apartment. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if this horse didn't get sent to the Middle East to get studded, or to Africa, to Libya, something like that.
The last suspect,
yeah,
is the Mafia.
Really? Like the good old Italians?
Yes.
Okay. Was it Arnold Rothstein?
No. But the reason that this one was published is really funny. Because like we said, Aga Khan, super big into horse breeding and trading and selling. And supposedly, the mafia tried to buy a horse from him and the deal went sour.
Oh, yeah. I've actually heard that theory before. Yeah. It was a sour horse deal.
A sour horse deal. Someone left the horse deal on the counter for too long and it went sour.
Smell this horse deal.
Oh, man. That horse deal's sour.
Does this horse deal smell sour to you?
He's like, I'm going to kill myself. My horse deal went sour. No, so that's the third one. There is very little evidence for that one.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
And it was pretty much just like a tabloid headline on the front cover being like, Mafia stole sugar, and that was it.
Yeah, well, and it's an interesting thing, because even if it was the IRA, like with Gaddafi, it leaves a lot of openings, right? Because the IRA, as previously mentioned, while a fundamentalist group, were also guns for hire. They needed money. They needed to be able to purchase the things they needed to outfit their guys and gals. And I don't know. I wonder how deep that hole goes. Because once you start, once it's like, if the IRA is the most likely candidate for who did this, well, which, shit, honestly, anybody with money could be.
8 weeks after sugar was stolen, one of the detectives was approached, and he was introduced to a guy named Dennis Minigo, who was a horse trainer. And Minigo was like, hey, I have contact with the IRA. I can get us. They showed me a picture of sugar. I can get us in a meeting. I need $80,000 and I can get him back. And the police officer was like, yeah, Sean Cosgrove, go ahead. Here's the $80,000. Put the money in the trunk of your car. Park it in this remote village. The IRA is going to pick it up and they're going to, I guess, put the horse in the trunk. It wasn't really thought through. They're leaving the head, in the horse
just
box.
The head.
But they're like, hey, we're going to do a sting operation. So we're going to put the money there. We're going to have it. Wait for them to come get it. We're going to surround them and catch them. And so they're like, yeah, let's do it. He puts the money in his car. Minigo was supposed to collect the money once the horse had been released. So he's like, yeah, I'll talk to them. I'll get them to release the horse. Then I'll pick up the money to give him the money. The next morning, they wake up. The trunk of his car was forced open by a crowbar. The money was missing. Minigo had disappeared, and the money was never recovered.
And that's a slick-ass scam.
Yeah.
That's a really slick scam.
He was like, hey, man, I'll get this horse for you. Just put some money in your trunk, and I'll do the rest. And he just stole the money.
I hope that in the investigation of what happened a month ago at the Capitol, we learned that a bunch of these dipshit Trumpers also got duped in a similar fashion. I hope there was a guy that was like, Patriots, if you just give me 100 of your American green dollars right now, I can guarantee you I'm going to stop the steal.
Well, that's like the whole thing of people posting on different forums and stuff and being like, listen, I run this thing for Trump. He wants to pardon everyone that was there. Put your name, your social security, what crimes you think you need to be pardoned for, and any evidence you have towards those crimes, and I'll be sure you get put on the pardon list. And that person was just collecting information to turn into the FBI, which is so funny.
I definitely joked right after, you know, it's happening that somebody should start a fake Patriot bail fund.
I saw something the other day that was like, hey, for $10, I'll Photoshop your boss at the Capitol riots.
Yeah, it's my favorite category on Fiverr. How much? 10 years later, there was a guy, Sean O'Callaghan.
Yes.
Yeah, and Sean O'Callaghan came forward in a different investigation, went patsy. If our episode last week didn't put us on a bunch of hit lists, us talking shit about the IRA is probably definitely going to do it.
Yeah, probably.
It's been great doing this podcast for all six of you. It really has.
Sean O'Callaghan.
Yeah, 10 years later.
Got arrested in 1999.
Yep.
As he was a former member of the IRA, and he got arrested in a different crime, and he was like, hey, let me tell you, I'll give you some information about sugar. You guys remember sugar? And they're like, fuck, we do remember sugar. Give us that information. And he was like, yeah, so sugar got arrested and died shortly after.
Got arrested?
Or got kidnapped.
Yeah, so what he said was that
involuntarily arrested.
Yeah, so he gave a very detailed account of what allegedly happened. And he said that the night that he was in the group that took the horse, right? Like, he was present.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys not talking. Well, now he's talking, singing like he a canary.
Fucking wrote a book.
Yeah. So he said that they get there, the horse is in this box, and this is the thing that immediately comes to mind, just as somebody who's dealt with horses and a lot of cattle and getting them on and off of things. When the story was brought up to me by you, the first thing I thought is, how'd that horse not get hurt? And it turns out the horse probably did get hurt.
Yes.
They put it in this horse box, and O'Callaghan said that the horse was super excited, and it was getting fucking kidnapped, no shit. And listen, horses, I'm just going to say this as a person, I'm no horse girl, but I have been around a lot of horses, and what I can tell you is that they understand how you feel.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we got telepathic anthropomorphic relationships with these animals, but they understand if they're in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Horses especially.
Yeah.
Horses are some of the most skittish animals on the planet, unless you've got a draft horse or something like that.
A giraffe
horse. They're I'm pretty sure giraffes are also pretty scared cats.
No, a draft horse is a horse that you don't have in bottles or cans.
You guys got any horses on draft?
No, we only got canned horse.
Boxed horse. So this boxed horse is getting really upset, and they pull over to try to get it to calm down a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And on the third or fourth, one of these times, when they're pulling over to check on the horse, they realize it's broken its leg.
Yeah.
Because it probably kicked that box. My guess is the horse was just excited enough to be able to move around enough to hurt itself.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, you have to be careful. Like, when you have a horse in a trailer and you're driving down a freeway, you have to, the reason horse trailers are as big as they are, the horse is only connected, a lot of times the horse isn't connected at all, just in case. But if it is, it's just a very loose, long connection. Because horses, once they start to, they're horses. Have you ever heard the term wild horses?
No.
Like, they have a really hard time being in confined spaces.
Yeah.
And they're big, scared animals. This is like the easiest way in the world to hurt this horse. And it's a racehorse. You can't break its leg. You break its leg and... Well, Caleb, what do you have to do if you break a horse's leg?
You put it down.
Yeah, you do. You have to put it down. Most of the times you do. I've been in that situation. You unfortunately do have to put a horse down.
So there's a man, Jerry Fitzgerald, who was part of the IRA. He went to O'Callaghan and he was like, this was 2 weeks after Sugar's kidnapping. Jerry Fitzgerald went to O'Callaghan and was like, hey, I was, you know, the Sugar kidnapping? I was part of that. And let me tell you, Sugar got killed early on. He was like, yeah, we were driving, he panicked, no one was present to calm him down, and he broke his left leg, and the decision was made to kill him.
Yeah.
And he said that Sugar was killed within days of the theft, and Fitzgerald strongly suggests that Sugar had been killed within hours of his kidnap. O'Callaghan, in his book, was like, he had been killed within days, but Fitzgerald, the guy who was actively, supposedly a member of the kidnapping, was like, no, dude, it was within hours. The IRA then kept up the deception that the horse was still alive and in their care.
Which explains why, what we were talking about earlier, that explains why when the guy was on the phone, and he was like, people who are listening to this in the audio are going to be like, why do they keep talking about emphasis on phones? We're making the hand phone gesture, that's why. So, and it looks really dumb. So, you know, like, this idea that this horse got hurt and put down pretty quickly, I don't know. It makes sense to me. Like,
yeah.
I could see why that lends, like I said, that lends credence to why they couldn't show further proof when they were like, show us more of the horse. And they were like, we can't. If that's not good enough for you, that's it. And I think at that point, obviously, the horse is dead, right? Because that's like the 11th or 12th. That's almost a week after this happened.
Yeah.
Like, the horse had been dead for days. So there's nothing they could do about it. All they can really do is shrug and go, well, if they don't want to go for it, we actually can't really do anything. We also can't return this horse.
Yeah.
So
they're like, we're really hoping we get the money. Otherwise, it's a wash.
Like, imagine getting your horse stolen, paying £2 million to get it back. And they're like, oh, yeah, your horse is over there. It's behind that barn. And you go back there, and there's just a headstone.
Yeah.
You know? Like, there wasn't really, like, or, that's a bullshit cover story, and Gaddafi was riding this horse around shirtless in Libya. Which is, again, if you'd like to make us a painting.
So, when it comes to arrests and stuff like that about the case, no arrests have ever been made in relation to Sugar's theft.
Yeah, the stuff with O'Callaghan, as we mentioned, he was being arrested for something else.
Yes.
And gave information.
And according to O'Callaghan, in August of 1983, an effort to raise money that they failed to do with the sugar theft. Fitzgerald and his group attempted to kidnap the businessman, Galen Weston.
Okay.
And the police had been told that, hey, they're going to kidnap these people, took over the house while Weston was in the UK. And after a gunfight, Fitzgerald and a couple other and four other people were arrested and received long prison sentences. And O'Callaghan stated that essentially the same team that kidnapped Sugar went to kidnap Weston. And so he was
so
like,
if you're going to arrest anybody, you already got them all.
Yeah. But that being said, no arrests have ever been made in relation to Sugar's
death. And Sugar's also never been found. That body's never been found.
Nope.
Yeah, there's never been any evidence. Hopefully, we were talking about this the other day, but maybe if you guys like this video enough and we can raise any kind of money, once the quarantine's done, we'll go to Ireland and see if we can't find the skull of Sugar.
The IRA has also never admitted to any role in the theft or its aftermath, because of course not.
Yeah,
not
why would
be
they?
Like,
they
we
don't
stole
have
that
to.
Dead horse.
Yeah.
And another weird thing is there was an anonymous IRA source that told a newspaper that two men went into the stable where Sugar was being held and one was carrying a machine gun. And he was like, no, we killed the horse instantly.
Yeah, and he also didn't say, he was like pretty graphic in his depiction. He was like, there was blood everywhere. We shot it with so many bullets.
Didn't
he say the horse slipped on its own blood?
I have the quote right here.
Trigger warning.
Yes.
To all of this. This is animal abuse. It wasn't abuse. It's murder. It's slaughter. So just be aware of what we're about to describe.
So there are a couple things with this story. Well, I'll do the graphic one, and then I'll lighten it up with a funnier anecdote about this. So he said that, which this has been proven to be false.
Okay.
So this is a trigger warning, but not true.
Yeah.
This is false information. Sugar was machine gunned to death. There was blood everywhere, and the horse
very Valentine's Day appropriate.
The horse even slipped on his own blood. There was lots of cussing and swearing because the horse wouldn't die.
That paints such a picture of like these dudes. Could you imagine? There's just like four IRA guys that are in this barn with this giant horse that's hurt, and they're like, I don't know, just shoot it. And they're like, but boss, like. What do you mean, just shoot it? Just shoot it. And there's, like, these four dudes. Because you ever seen, like, two plumbers try to fix the same pipe?
Mm-hmm.
It's that. But it's four guys with machine guns being like, what the fuck are we doing? Shoot it in the head. I don't know.
So, to lighten
Cody Coe would love this story because it's about a horse getting murdered.
To lighten it back up, in 2008, there was a special investigation by the Sunday Telegraph who got information from a different supposed IRA informant who remained anonymous, who said that O'Callaghan had not been told the full story because the gang was so embarrassed by what happened. And they said that they got a vet to look after Sugar, but the vet who the IRA had arranged to look after Sugar did not turn up because his wife threatened to leave him if he did.
Well, I mean.
And he said, this IRA informant said that the IRA realized that Aga Khan was not going to pay them. The Army Council ordered the horse to be released. And the extensive search by the police hampered any release. And that's why that they killed the horse.
Okay.
That the horse wasn't actually injured.
They just realized afterwards, they were like, this is not going
to work. We have to release this horse. And they were like, if we release this horse, we're going to get caught. So they just killed the horse and put his body in a bog. Which is still the remaining theory that Sugar's body has never been found and never been identified. Several sources, including O'Callaghan, said that the body was probably buried near Aughachalene, which
it's
is
okay.
In Northern
with Ireland,
Ireland,
you definitely get, in Northern Ireland, especially, you get some leniency.
And they said that it was buried on a farm of a former IRA veteran from the 40s.
Okay.
And they did that because it'd be extremely difficult for the police to get permission to dig there. Because they're like, hey, former IRA guy, can we dig on your land? And he's like, fuck you.
What do you think?
And that town has a strong sense of republicanism.
So any of the Queens.
Any of the Queen's Guard or anything like that would be shut down.
Any there royal been police.
Tons of equine skeletons that have been like, hey, this is Sugar skeleton. And they've done stuff like Das Lieden. He's a specialist horse vet with knowledge of equine pathology. Is like, no, it's not. He's like, we can do DNA stuff. These aren't his bones. They have some remains, or they have some strands of his hair from his mane and his tail, which are like, we can get DNA from it.
He was a studding horse. They have the DNA from this horse.
They're like,
not to be terribly vulgar, but this horse's entire existence revolved around its jizz.
Yeah.
Like, they know its DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, never found his horse bones. I'm
telling you, come on, guys, let's do it. Let's find the skull of Shergar. We'll put it right here. We'll have it on the back, centrally focused. It'll be great.
Could you imagine? One, could you imagine finding it? Two, could you imagine how difficult it would be to bring back?
I feel like, you know, we could probably lie. We could probably
earmuffs.
We could probably lie.
If you're a part of the Irish government, just plug your ears real quick. Yeah, we could lie to those idiots. We could totally bring them up.
Just say it's a different horse.
It's a different... Also, we could just straight up tell them the truth. It's been years. No one has found this horse's body. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, sure. Anyways, we'll talk about this later.
Conspiratorial ASMR.
No arrests have been made. No body has been found. This horse is gallivanting in a farm upstate.
Or...
In
a farm in Libya.
Yeah.
My closing thought on finding the remains is I wonder what effect Brexit is going to have. Because of the problems we're now seeing with Northern Ireland and the relationship. For those who don't know, Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. The rest of Ireland is not. When they left the EU, that caused all kinds of problems. Shipping problems, tax problems. Basically, the troubles... incredibly bad time in Ireland, very traumatic time, very recent time.
Yeah.
When the border was armed during this time, they had guard towers up. Yeah, so those guard towers, you know, all this stuff has come back up. They've kind of had to remilitarize that border, which is incredibly traumatic. We're talking about the 80s
here. Yeah.
You know, like, you weren't born yet, but I was. Like, it's not yet, I guess, here, but still, it's recent history, I guess, is what I'm getting at. So with Brexit causing that to happen now, you also kind of have to wonder what other effects it might have. Uh-huh. And I wonder if it'll open... my immediate thought is it makes this harder to find this. Because I think of Scotland Yard. I think of a police agency that would be willing to open this back up. It doesn't really seem like the Irish police... like, they're done with this case.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. There's not really anything to be gained from it. It's not like It's not like Aga Khan is looking for... such a cool name.
It is.
Khan! It's not like he's looking for the horse, you know? It's not like... the horse is gone. That's what kind of, to me, makes it feel like an inside job. I will say that I kind of feel like the vet on the team, or the doctor on the team, the way the horse was stolen, the fact that it was insured for, you know, a fifth of what it should have been insured for. However, it was still insured for twice the amount they were asking for. A lot of it just feels very, like, why would I steal a $15 million diamond from you that you have insured for $4 million, but only ask you for two? You have it insured for four.
That's true.
So if it disappears, you're still getting $4 million out of it. You know what I mean? Like, either way, they were going to get money out of this horse's disappearance. He was insured.
Yeah.
So, to me, I don't know. What's your conclusion? Who do you think did it? Allegedly, who do you think did it?
Probably the IR. Like...
but do you think they were acting on their own volition?
Yes, because at the time, specifically this time, in 1983, the IRA was getting pretty desperate.
Yeah, for money.
For funding.
Yeah.
So I fully believe...
it wasn't the only kidnapping they were doing at the time.
Like I said, months later, a bunch of them got caught for trying to kidnap a businessman.
Yeah.
And, like everyone knows, when someone gets desperate, that's when they make mistakes.
Yeah. So, definitely believable that they were like, I don't know, go try to find some money.
Yeah.
Also, Shergar as a target feels... very, I know this just kind of goes against what I'm saying, but entertain all options.
Yeah.
It definitely feels like a rush job.
It does, and it's like, well, how do we get good money? That's like in early 2000 being like, ah, shit, I really need some money. Air Bud, I'll kidnap Air Bud. Because he's popular. He's worth a lot of money.
It's the exact same thing. He also won the Kentucky Derby.
He also is a dog who plays basketball.
And football.
And he had a litter of puppies called the Air Buddies.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could totally see, like, that'd be like someone being like, ah, shit, I need $2 million real quick. Let me go kidnap Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just, it's such an impulsive, like, why don't we grab that fucking horse? To me, it feels like, have you seen Uncut Gems?
Yeah.
That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
It feels like somebody who made a rush decision, did something stupid, and now they're covering up for it.
Yeah.
It feels so much like losing Kevin Garnett's ring.
And it's a lot like, I mean, kidnapping an animal, I essentially just realized I'm about to describe the plot to the first Ace Ventura movie. Kidnapping an animal, one, it's going to get you a lot of publicity.
Snowflake? You're talking about Snowflake?
Talking about Snowflake. You're going to get a lot of publicity because people inherently love animals way more than they care about people. That's also going to get more money because, like I said, people care about animals more than they care about people.
Yeah, dude, kidnapping an animal is like kidnapping a kid without the baggage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
also, let's just pretend I didn't just say what I just said.
And if things go awry, you get in a whole lot less trouble for killing an animal than you do killing a person.
Yeah, because it's like kidnapping a kid with a lot less baggage.
No, you get in a lot more trouble if you kidnap or if you kill a kid.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You get in way more trouble if you kill a kid than if you kill a horse.
So I entirely believe if the IRA was desperate enough at that time, which they were, for money, it totally seems plausible for them to do this.
Definitely, definitely.
I don't believe the mafia one because it was That's
imagine doing that shit. That screams I saw The Godfather.
Yeah.
Because horse heads and all that stuff.
But
that's also like, I don't remember The Godfather exactly, but I'm pretty sure that's basically what happens in The Godfather. Because that's a racing horse that gets...
Yeah.
It's a racing horse that the Don owns.
But it's also very much like tugging on threads that aren't there. That's like, yeah, Terry borrowed $20 from Dad here and... never paid it back, and Terry's car broke down the other day. I'm pretty sure it was Dad that did it.
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
That's what that is, essentially. Yeah, the mafia tried to buy a horse from this guy, and it fell through. That's why I think they kidnapped and murdered this guy's prized possession.
The world's prized horse,
yeah.
Too. Like, it's not just any horse, you know? Yeah, that's fair. Also, to be clear, Terry actually only lets me buy weed in Dogecoin now. He's really big on it. He's been tweeting about it all week.
He will not shut up about it. And I am pissed because I do not want that man's face to be the face of anything that I'm tied to.
I know.
But I hate it so much.
We are proud Dogecoin owners, but not because of our weed guy, Terry.
It's like anything he's tied to. People love to make him like, oh, he's this meme lord. No,
he's an awkward old boomer is what he is.
He is.
He's the guy.
His success is built off apartheid crystals. Like,
and he's like a guy who hung out at the college for too long. You know, it's like, you're 35, bro. Like, what are you still doing here? You don't work in the psychology department. Get lost.
He also addresses his wife by her stage name, which is really weird.
I like to think that that's just the only name she's ever given him. You know, just in case.
Yeah. Someone's like, how's, I don't actually know what Grimes' real name is.
I don't either.
How is she? Who? He also, I just saw an interview the other day to go a little off topic.
This is the last 10 minutes of the podcast where we just rip on Elon Musk.
Someone asked him how his son was doing and called him by AEX23 or whatever the fuck he is. And he's like, who? And they're like, your son. He's like, oh, my son. Yeah, he's fine. No, so
he's good. I just gave him a firmware upload.
I just put a floppy disk in his mouth and his eyes rolled back and now he's 2 years older.
It's like WandaVision. Age up.
So to kind of round out
the
podcast on a high note.
Yeah.
I want to talk about
not talk about machine gunning horses to death too much.
We're gonna talk about the nice things that are Sugar's legacy. My brain shut off for a second.
Sugar's legacy.
So, in honor of Sugar, the Sugar Cup was inaugurated at Goodwood Racecourse.
Yeah.
And it was a format that put European team of jockeys against one from the Middle East, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you have ties in both of this. Let's do a fun race. Let's name it after the English-Irish horse that's owned by a Middle Eastern man.
But imagine if it was stolen by Gaddafi. And that's what they did with it.
That is weird.
That's all right. He got heels. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Then it was later moved to the Ascot Racecourse and is now a competition between four teams, Great Britain and Ireland, Europe, the rest of the world, and an all-women's team.
Interesting. The rest of the world and an all-women's team. Is the all-women's team also international?
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And women, I mean, I guess. Women, I don't know where they're from. I think they're from Venus, but I don't know.
The four countries, the UK, Europe, the rest of the world, and women. That's the most UK thing in the world.
Yeah, that is the Anglian.
Let me introduce you to the world. Us, the countries that we owned, women.
And everybody else.
But whoever wins that competition are given a trophy that has sugar on top of it.
Oh.
And that trophy was donated by Aga Khan. And on the 20th anniversary of Sugar's Derby win, a bronze statuette of the horse was presented to the winning jockey.
Okay.
So, like I said, he did win the Queen's Derby or whatever. And so the 20th anniversary of him winning that, the winning jockey was like, here's a little statue of Sugar.
It's like bobblehead night at the ballpark.
And a statue of Sugar stands at the grounds of Giltown Stud, which is another one of Aga Khan's Irish stud farms.
Aga Khan. No, thank you everybody for joining us today, talking about Shergar, the still missing, well, he's dead now, but the missing horse.
Yeah.
What if he's alive out there?
Well, you know? I don't think horses live that long.
I don't either.
He's dead regardless now.
Yeah, the horse's life is probably shorter than the statute of limitations on this crime.
Yeah, pour one out for Sugar.
Yeah, pour several out.
Wherever you are.
One big heavy horse.
Pour one out for Single G, my
family's
horse.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout outs to Single G, to Harry Barefoot and Billy B. Barefoot.
If you ever find yourself in Cambridge City, Indiana, I don't know why you're there, but find the post office. There's a mural of Single G on the side of it.
If you're there and you take a picture of it, tag us. Send it to us.
Post it on Instagram, post it on Twitter, tag us.
Yeah.
At Acid Cat News Net on both.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Comment on this if you have any connection to racehorses that
yeah.
you think is cool.
Yeah, 100%. Let us know if you have any funny horse stories. My sister could definitely include the fact that she can't ride a horse. And every time she's tried, she's ended up with stitches in the back of her head.
Interesting. I have one interesting racehorse story as well. My elementary school gym teacher, her mom raised horses. And one day was holding the rein of a racehorse and it was wrapped around her hand. The horse got spooked and took off running and took her pinky with it.
Oh!
But this shows how badass. One, my elementary gym teacher was a badass lady, and so was her mom. Her mom walked over to her pinky on the ground, picked it up, put it in her pocket, and walked to the hospital. Which is sick as hell.
It is sick as hell.
But anyways, thank you for watching. Like and subscribe if you haven't already.
Yeah.
Share this with your friends.
Yeah, please do. Please.
Follow us on Instagram. Once we get enough subscribers, we're giving away the signed, sealed copy of Rush Hour.
Shit, yeah, we are.
Then we have a giveaway after that, once it's gone, that is equally fun and also sealed. I'll give we've said before, we're not going to tell you what it is. That's a little snippet of what it is. It's sealed.
Signed, sealed. That's the best way to do a giveaway.
Signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours. But anyways, thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
Hopefully. I can make it real tense. I'm real good at choking someone.
This is going to be evidence.
So when I was choking this person the other day, I fucking ditched his body off the highway.